The following podcast is sponsored by Financial Sense Wealth Management. To learn more about our investment services, go to financialsensewealth.com or give us a call at 888-486-3939.
The U.S. economy had a robust end to 2023, with the gross domestic product exceeding expectations. The Commerce Department reports GDP rose by 3.3% in the fourth quarter. That's compared to just over 2.5% in the final 3 months of 2022.
U.S. inflation continues to trend lower, according to a closely watched report out Friday. Cooling inflation has bolstered expectations that the Federal Reserve could start cutting rates as soon as March.
Today, the Biden-Harris administration announced a temporary pause on exports of liquefied natural gas.
It was a big day for oil prices today because they were up more than 2%, as much as 3% for WTI, breaking above the resistance of $75 a barrel, above $77 a barrel today. You also are looking at Brent crude that is up more than 2.5%, Brent crude above $82.
U.S. Central Command confirmed today it had shot down another anti-ship ballistic missile that was flying towards the USS Carney from Houthi-controlled Yemen. The ship was operating in the Gulf of Aden. A lot of the focus so far has been on the U.S.-UK response to these attacks. But China is now getting involved. Officials from Beijing have been asking Iranian counterparts to help rein in the Houthis.
This is the Financial Sense News Hour. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team.
The major indexes logged in with another gain this week, with the S&P 500 hitting a new record before pulling back on Friday. The record set this week finally took out the old high reached back in 2021. Markets were driven once again by the Magnificent Seven, with the exception of Tesla, which has become less magnificent this year. Chip stocks pulled back on Friday after Intel reported results far below expectations. Now, one of the big stories this year is interest rates. Interest rates have risen this week. One of the big stories is they've been rising since the beginning of the year after falling throughout the entire fourth quarter of last year. Bond yields have risen by nearly half a percentage point this month, with the 2, the 10, and the 30-year bond now back over 4%. Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to the Financial Sense News Hour. Our technician this week is John Roque. John sees the 10-year falling to 3.5 by the end of the year. His favorite sectors for investing are healthcare, tech, and financials. The big risk he sees to the markets this year could be the return of inflation.
The New York Fed's weekly economic index, a very high frequency measure of real economic growth. It has a very close correlation with real GDP. It includes measures like breadbook retail sales, consumer sentiment, wholesale steel output, electricity usage. It gives you a very granular look at what the US economy is doing in as close to real time as possible. We actually have seen real growth by this measure accelerate in the last 3 months. And so all that's to say, you know, real growth in the US economy is accelerating. And the decline in rates that we've seen is probably going to cause real growth to accelerate further, aided by the housing market and the goods economy, which tend to be very interest rate sensitive. And as long as we remain at sub 4% employment, we're probably going to see pretty robust wage growth, call it 4 to 4.5%. And we think that'll drive income growth of 5% plus, consumption growth of 5% plus. And you're going to see more headlines about a resilient, strong consumer. You're not going to see significant weakness in the consumer as long as the labor market looks the way it does.
To listen to this full interview, in addition to gaining access to all of our premium content airing during the week, go to financialsense.com and hit the subscribe button.
At Financial Sense Wealth Management, we are committed to helping you build, maintain, and preserve your wealth. Contact us today to find out about our comprehensive asset management and financial planning services. Whether you are planning for retirement, taxes, putting together an estate plan, or need assistance in managing a 401k, Financial Sense Wealth Management is here to help. Give us a call to speak with one of our certified financial planners or wealth advisors at 888-486-3939. Or go to financialsensewealth.com and hit where it says Contact Us. Advisory services offered through Financial Sense Advisors, Inc., a registered investment advisor. Securities offered through Financial Sense Securities, Inc., member FINRA SIPC. both companies doing business as Financial Sense Wealth Management.
Well, we're off to another good start for the year. The markets are up this year after stumbling a little bit from the beginning. And where is this headed? It looks like the Magnificent Seven are once again in the lead. Is that the way this market plays out? Well, let's find out. Joining us on the program is John Roque. And by the way, John, Happy New Year.
Same to you, Jim. Thanks for having me again.
John, is this going to be another year similar to last year where we saw a handful of stocks start to dominate? Although today we saw a little change with IBM moving in, a nice run up today on IBM based on their AI. But what's your view here?
I think the market has been broadening out. So I think it's going to be more than a select grouping of stocks. I'll call them Big Seven, call them Magnificent Seven. And I think that was kind of last year's focus. I'm not saying that they're not going to do well, although the Magnificent Seven or Big Seven are down to Big Six now because Tesla has taken on some gas. But I think otherwise the market is broadening out and has broadened out pretty nicely.
So we've got more sectors that are starting to participate in this rally. And when you're looking at these sectors, tech's obviously doing well. What other sectors look good to you in terms of this breakout?
Well, financials and financials as a broader sector than banks have done, banks within that sector have done very well. I know that the HMO stocks have had a tough go of it of late and today as well, but healthcare is much improved. Industrials is also much improved. So those sectors in particular have acted well on my work, Jim. Financials under that, banks, of course, healthcare and industrials.
What about the REITs? We saw a little bit of a pop in the REITs last year towards the end of the year. What about the real estate industry?
As you said, Jim, there was a nice rally there, and I'm glad to have seen it or to identify it. I'd say that there's probably more challenges there than there are for the financials, healthcare, and industrials, but it's a welcome sign that they've decided to join in and improve, yes.
Some of the other areas that look pretty good, I'm looking on a screen, consumer staples at least are in an uptrend. They look a little consolidation here. As you mentioned, industrials have been taken off. Healthcare is looking good along with financials. So we're seeing a little bit of broadening. What about the energy sector? I mean, it was down in the dumps. Looks like it's picking up here.
So energy, I think over the last 5 days is up about 4.5%, almost 5%. So it is showing some life of late. And I'm going to say this only because I'm going to put some context in it. I had some real questions about the energy sector last year, mostly because, you know, nearly everybody I spoke to about it was bullish, yet the index and the stocks were not going anywhere. And I thought that was a little bit curious. So I'm a little bit dubious on energy doing much better. I think there are other places to work with. And I'm trying to stick with a mantra that I've known for a long time, but sometimes I tend to forget my own mantras. I want to do more of what's working and less of what's not working. And I think energy is still in the weeds here so far.
So outside these other sectors, I want to talk about, what do you see in terms of markets overseas? Is this going to be just a U.S. market pretty much like last year, or do you see this broadening overseas as well?
So I'll tell you, and thank you for that question. As we've had many conversations over the years, you know, I do a lot of work on other markets and other assets aside from stocks and indexes here in the States. So on my work, Europe's markets are actually in a stronger position overall than our indexes broadly. So Europe's in a stronger position. That's curious because most people will tell you Europe is either entering or in a recession or will enter a recession. And then in Asia, if you strip out China and Hong Kong, which has had a big rally over the last 2 or 3 days, that group is okay, led by Japan. And Japan has been the best big market in the world since last April. I know we haven't had to, collectively, we haven't had to pay much attention to it because the Big Seven or Magnificent Seven have been just that, so magnificent. But Japan really has been the best big market globally for the last year. And I think Japan will make an assault on and break its all-time highs from late 1989.
Boy, that would be something because they haven't been able to do that, as you mentioned, since 1989, almost like what would that be, 30, 40 years? They've gone absolutely nowhere.
It's been a generation, and of course, people have become so jaded about Japanese equities because they've been burned for so long. But since last spring, Japan has been such a consistently strong performer. In fact, the internals in Japan were stronger last year than our internals. And year to date, the internals for Japan have been stronger than our internals. So I think I've heard that others say to me that, it's well owned. It is not well owned in my estimation. And so I think Japan's still in a great position.
You know, it's interesting because one of the big stories I saw last year was Warren Buffett was investing in Japan. So once again, the guy's sharp.
Yeah, he was right. He bought the trading companies. Great job by him. And I'd say of the people that I speak with, and I don't speak with him, of course, but I would just use him as my example. He was a lone wolf in many respects, and investors didn't follow him into Japan.
Some of these stocks have done well. You know, you take a look at Toyota, which is going full steam with hybrids.
And take a look at Nintendo, NTDOY. I've gotten very lucky with Nintendo with some of our clients here and my firm, and the stock's just been, you know, a champ. So there's a lot of good Japanese stocks.
And we saw interest rates starting to come down, and then they started to pop since the beginning of the year. I'm looking at, we've got the 10-year Treasury note over 4. We've got the 30-year almost at 4.4, and we've got the 2-year at 4.3. What's your take on interest rates? Looks like they're up about maybe 40, 50 basis points since December.
I continue to think that the 2-year Treasury yield will get back down to its March 2023 or spring 2023 lows, which is about 3.55%. I think that the 10 and 30-year Treasury yields will remain stronger. Consequently, I'm expecting a steepening yield curve. But I think on the shorter end, rates will work lower. I think on the longer end, rates will stay, let's say, stickier, for lack of a better word.
Now, some people are saying that, you know, even though the curve may steepen, you could see 10 years in the 3% range. Do you see that happening?
I'm going to say, I'm not going to answer your question, not because I'm being rude. I'm going to say, I don't have a good answer for you. I haven't thought about it that way. I have more confidence about my opinion or call on the 2-year Treasury yield right here.
Okay. All right. Let's move over to the commodity side. I've seen some of the bullish forecasts that I've seen in a couple of years for gold. It seems to be hovering around that 2000 level, but at least it's holding there. Where do you see gold going?
So I think, Jim, I'm going to say the following. Gold is very good at giving investors agita. Gold had a chance in early December to really break out and establish itself at new highs. And on the very day that it broke out, which was a Sunday night into a Monday morning, it reversed its breakout and has been consolidating since. It is still above an upward sloping 200-day moving average. And I think it's been above there for maybe the last 60 days or so. So it gets the benefit of every doubt. However, I will say the following. It is unlikely that there will be a big gold advance if there's not a commodity advance, a broad commodity advance.
So you would like to see things like base metals, ags, and other commodities move?
Yeah, I'd like to see some other things improve. Now, I'll tell you, I did this morning, maybe in anticipation of you asking the question, but over the last 5 days, and that could be a start. I'm not certain, but it could be a start. There's been some pickup across the board in most of the commodities that I kind of pay attention to. But other than that, it's very difficult to make the case there if we don't have base metals improving. And of course, that would be copper, aluminum, nickel, lead, tin, zinc, and of course, then silver and gold as well. So I think in order to have a real gold bull market, there's got to be a commodity advance, and there will not be a commodity advance unless there is a gold bull market. So I'm probably saying the same thing in two different formats.
So when you look at this, I want to move on to another area that was just stellar towards the end of the year, and that's Bitcoin and some of the cryptos. You had a nice run-up to the introduction of crypto ETFs, but as soon as that was announced, it was kind of like buy on the rumor, sell on the news, and it's been correcting since then.
I only follow it on a cursory basis. I'm mad at myself because I should have been able to identify and participate at the very least in the breakout that took place over the last few months. So I'd really like to see Bitcoin consolidate or correct a little bit for me to get involved. I'm not really a chase guy, so I don't feel comfortable chasing it here. It's had a great move. It looks fantastic, but I'd much rather see it consolidate or pull back for me to get involved.
Yeah, one of the other technicians we had on the show, if you're going to get into cryptos, you better keep some Pepto-Bismol.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, because, I mean, when this thing corrects, and we've seen, I don't know, a number of times I can count 70% pullbacks in the cryptos.
Yeah, when it goes down, it's not for the faint of heart. But, you know, if its history is any guide, after such a bear market for Bitcoin, it usually comes back and makes a new all-time high. So I guess the Bitcoin aficionados are on board with that. I would just love to see it consolidate a little bit before I could get involved with it again.
Now, what move do you think? Of course, money flows can move the market. But now that you have ETFs that are investing in Bitcoin, do you think that'll have any influence on its price?
I'm sure it will have some influence on the price. I don't know enough about the crypto vagaries for me to say this with any confidence. But I'm going to answer your question by saying the following. I really like the Russell 2000 here, and I think it is slowly improving. But the Russell 2000 is always an IWM story first, and I'll make this analogy. Milton Friedman said, inflation is always and everywhere a monetary phenomenon. The Russell 2000 is always and everywhere an IWM phenomenon, because there's not a PM in the world who's going to sell some big cap stocks and buy 200 small cap stocks to satisfy his cap requirements. So I think it always starts with the IWM. So I may be extrapolating it too much, but I would believe that the demand for the Bitcoin ETFs will likely have an effect on the action in Bitcoin, and or of course vice versa.
John, just for listeners, explain IWM.
So the IWM is the Russell 2000 ETF. And so my point of making that analogy is that 40% of the stocks in the Russell 2000 do not make any money. So you have to eliminate 40% of the stocks there for most portfolio managers, because I'm sure PMs would rather buy stocks that make money. Number two is there's not enough cap, market cap, to make all cap PMs happy. So it's unlikely that they will sell big cap stocks to buy small cap stocks. It's just too hard to do. So I think in order to adjust their exposures, especially on the hedge fund side, hedge fund managers, PMs, will use the IWM, which is the Russell 2000 ETF, to help with their exposures. If they think small caps can outperform, or the Russell 2000 can outperform, they're not going to buy 200 small cap stocks. They're going to buy the IWM. Or if they think the Russell 2000 will underperform, they're not going to sell short 200 small cap stocks. They'll sell short the IWM. So the IWM is their proxy for a bigger view on small caps.
You know, what's really surprising, given the nice run-up that we had last year, and especially with the Magnificent Seven, I was looking at the forecast for all the big firms this year, and I was really surprised, John. With the exception of one or two, most of them were rather subdued. They didn't expect much from the market this year. What do you think that is?
I think that most people have believed, and this is not extraordinary for me to say it or for me to say that this was their belief, because history suggests that this should have happened, that with such a run-up in interest rates that most people probably believe the indexes would have had a tougher time. Now, I will tell you that I believe that there was an internal bear market last year that ended in late October. It was not a bear market in the indexes, nor was it a bear market in, let's say, a select grouping of big cap stocks, but it was a bear market in consumer staples. It was a bear market in energy. It was a bear market in banks. There was a bear market in materials. There was a bear market in real estate, and there was a bear market in utilities. There was a bear market in biotech. So I think with all of those internal bear markets in those sectors, that most people probably said to themselves, well, rates are so high, the indexes should come in. And the indexes didn't come in because they're weighted to a great degree to seven, plus stocks. So maybe because rates are still, let's say, high, or because we did have an inverted yield curve, that people are kind of waiting for another shoe to drop. So perhaps that's a reason. And perhaps also they think that the effects of rates being high for, let's say, what was an unusually extended period, given that we were so used to rates falling or staying low, that perhaps they think that has yet to really work its way into the economy and affect it. So perhaps those are some reasons, Jim.
Okay, you mentioned utilities. We had a nice run-up as interest rates came down towards the end of the year. But with the rise of rates that we've seen since December, utilities are in a downtrend. Do you see that continuing?
I want to believe that the utilities can hold in here. They are still below a downward sloping 200-day moving average, which, you know, that's kind of like the demand line for an item. It's below a downward sloping 200-day moving average. So it suggests to me that supply utility sellers is greater than the demand for utility buyers. So I think it's still a question mark. I'd like to be, you know, more bullish on it, or I'd like to be bullish on it. If there's a turn, I will be, but not just yet. I think it's still a little bit early. Again, I'm trying to work with, you know, do more of what's working and less of what's not working.
Okay. So if you were putting fresh money into the market right now, what would be your favorite sectors?
So my favorite sectors are financials, healthcare, and industrials. And I am not saying tech on purpose because I don't like it. I'm not saying tech because tech always wins. For me to say tech is the strongest is probably superfluous at this point and just repeats what others have likely said prior. Tech strong, semis are strong. If semis don't come in, tech's not going to come in. But there's pretty good stuff going on in financials, healthcare, and industrials.
In a last question, John, if there was any risk or something that would change the scenario we've been talking about, in your opinion, what would that be?
I think we should probably consider that maybe inflation might return. You know, that would be a cautionary sign, just a heads up, that rates work higher than they have so far on the bounce over the last month or so. Perhaps the unemployment figures get worse. And I know people will say, well, that just means the Fed will cut more quickly. But perhaps it would be a sign that the economy is not as robust as some others think. I think it is too hard to talk about consumer spending because while it was true for a long time that baseball was America's favorite pastime, consumer spending is really America's favorite pastime. America has an unquenchable thirst to spend. So I think it's hard to make an overall consumer comment, but I would look at inflation and interest rates first to see if anything changes there or they stay or move back higher. That might be something as an amber flashing light.
All right. Well, listen, John, as we close, how do our listeners follow your work? You do some great stuff.
Well, thank you, Jim. It's always a pleasure to be with you, and thanks for your kind words. So I'm at 22V Research. You could check our 22VResearch.com website. And also, I occasionally post on Twitter, and the Twitter handle is @DA Chart Life. And I went to university in the Bronx, so maybe that's why I have duh instead of the. So @DA Chart Life. Jim, thanks. Always a pleasure to be with you.
All right. Take care, my friend.
That concludes our weekend edition of the Financial Sense News Hour. To speak with our financial planning and wealth management team, give us a call at 888-486-3939. Or you can also visit us on our website, financialsensewealth.com. If you aren't already a subscriber to our weekday podcast and would like to listen to more of our content where we regularly interview book authors, industry experts, and market strategists from around the globe, go to financialsense.com and hit the subscribe button. On behalf of Financial Sense News Hour and the Financial Sense Wealth Management team, we hope you have a pleasant weekend.
Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of the Financial Sense staff and do not take into account listener suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense News Hour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies mentioned in Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.